Blog Talk Radio.
There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and tell you why. We will feed them on the land, on the sea, and in the sky. There's a better world to come and tell you why. There's a better world to come and don't you see? When we'll all be union and we'll all be free. There's a better world to come and don't you see?
Good evening and welcome once again to Progressive News Network. I'm your host and news director, Richard Spezak. We've got a very interesting show for you tonight. We've got two fantastic guests. We've got Patrick Murphy coming on, who's a progressive Democrat who's going to defeat Colonel West, a carpetbagger who came from southern Palm Beach up here to the Treasure Coast to try to win friends and influence idiots. And he'll be talking with us for a while, telling us about his plans. And what he has in mind. I've heard him speak a couple times. He's a tremendous speaker, someone the progressives can really get behind. And then we'll be joined by Justin Snyder of Credo. Interesting guest. Credo is putting some resources behind the Defeat West campaign. Of course, we know what Colonel West is cut from. But first, I want to cover some stories that are important to you and that you need to know about. The government sources say that pool number 4 is a grave concern. This is referring, of course, to Fukushima. One of the biggest issues we face is the possibility that the spent fuel pool of the number 4 reactor at the stricken Fukushima number 1 nuclear power plant will collapse. This is something that experts from both within and outside Japan have pointed out since the massive quake struck. Not only independent experts, but also sources within the government say this is a grave concern. Storage pool at the number 4 reactor building has a total of 1,535 fuel rods. That equals 460 tons of nuclear fuel. The 7-story building itself has suffered heavy damage, with the storage pool barely intact on the building's 3rd and 4th floor. The roof has been blown away. If the storage pool breaks and runs dry, the nuclear fuel inside will overheat and explode, causing a massive amount of radioactive substances to spread over a wide area. Both the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the French nuclear energy company Areva have warned about this risk. A report released in February by the Independent Investigation Commission on the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear accident has stated that the storage pool and the plant's number 4 reactor have clearly been shown to be the weakest link in the parallel chain reaction crisis of this nuclear disaster. Worst case scenario drawn up by the government includes not only the collapse of the number 4 reactor pool, but the disintegration of the spent fuel rods from all the plant's other reactors. If this were to happen, residents in the Tokyo metropolitan area would be forced to evacuate. Former Minister of Land, Infrastructure, Transport, and Tourism, Sumio Mabuchi, who was appointed in the post of then Prime Minister Naoto Kan's advisor on the nuclear disaster immediately after its outbreak, proposed the injection of concrete from below the number 4 reactor to the bottom of the storage pool, Chernobyl style. Because seawater was being pumped into the reactor, the soundness of the structure, concrete corrosion, deterioration, was quite questionable. There's also doubts about the calculations made on the earthquake resistance as well. Another story that's important you should know about is the fact that Japanese medical doctors are coming to America to tell the Fukushima's underreported health consequences. There'll be a press conference about the ongoing, rarely publicized, and still grave situation around the stricken Fukushima Daiichi nuclear reactor, featuring a nuclear scientist from Japan and firsthand medical reports of the clinical and on-site observations in Japan related to the Fukushima radiological contamination. And ladies and gentlemen, I think we've got our guests, so stick around. Good evening. I'd like to welcome you, sir.
How you doing?
Is this Mr. Murphy?
Yes, it is.
Well, welcome, sir. We welcome you very, very heartily here to the Progressive News Network. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Well, listen, there's so much we want to talk to you about. If I may, I'd like to ask you the one question that I try to ask all my guests, because it always seems intriguing to me, what is it that motivates people to get started on their work to try to make things better? So, Patrick, could you talk a little bit about what got you motivated to be a participant rather than just a witness to history?
Sure, of course. I get asked it on a daily basis, and it's a great question. People watch the news nowadays and see what's happening in politics, and they wonder why anybody would want to throw their hat in the ring. My background, actually, I was born and raised in the Florida Keys, and got a degree from the University of Miami in finance and accounting. Got my CPA license and worked for Deloitte & Touche for about 4 years. So I dealt with quite a bit of regulation and oversight there. And after that BP oil spill, I got very involved in cleaning that up in the Gulf of Mexico. And if you remember when that happened, they talked about that oil getting in the loop current and it possibly affecting the Florida Keys. And that's, as I said, where I'm from. So I put together a fleet of oil skimmers and basically went to work in New Orleans cleaning that up. And the idea was if it ever made in that loop current, I'd be the first company on standby to clean that up. And also got very involved in Haiti after the earthquake. And through those experiences, really began to see government's role in both my personal and business life, and got so frustrated with what I saw in those experiences, dating back to being a CPA dealing with Sarbanes-Oxley, then the oil spill, and then watching the Tea Party movement take hold. It was sort of a combination of factors, and when Alan West got elected in my backyard, that brand of extremism really pushed me over the edge. And I got so tired of pointing a finger and complaining, I just thought I was going to do something about it. And unfortunately, when you look at so many of the problems facing our country, they're going to come down on my generation. And we have to be part of the solution. We can't sit back on the sidelines. You know, we can't just Facebook or protest or blog. You know, we have to get involved and be part of the solution. So took a long, hard look at it and, took a real hard look at Congress and realized that there's only 7 CPAs there. And, you know, I think about over 80% of our Congress people have never worked in the private sector. And I decided that was where I wanted to get involved because we have major problems, and I think we need some reasonable leaders more concerned with solutions than the bickering we're seeing of late.
Oh, that's wonderful. In fact, that raises so many topics, the points that you've made. It seems to me that someone who grew up in the Keys can never think of infrastructure as very far from their mind, because the Keys is kind of a civilization stripped bare. You've got roads, you've got power, you've got water. These are all, nothing's invisible. It's all very much front and center. And of course, since you've been a South Florida resident for so long, you know that the issues of federal support in times of crisis, whether it be Hurricane Andrew, or as you mentioned that, I think that you bring a really fantastic array of life experiences, much less the fact that you've worked in the oil spill. So you know what that issue is about. And of course, your accounting means to me that you're a person who's not going to be one of those congressmen who just ignores the bills that are laid on their desk. You're actually going to read them.
That's for sure. And I actually find it enjoyable, which is maybe the scary part.
Well, you know, I
enjoy,
I mean,
the numbers, and I like to think I understand it pretty well. So,
well, you know, it seems to me that with all of the responsibilities that Congress must undertake to analyze, that the responsibilities of the public purse, the responsibilities of the expenditures, are really where the rubber hits the road. I mean, you can have your rhetoric, you can have your speeches, but it's in that analysis of how the money is being spent, both the income and the outgo. That's what makes a real leader that's where the civil servant really comes into play. And I think you're bringing just a wonderful array of talents to the table.
Well, thank you.
That's fantastic. Let me ask you about some of the tough issues facing Florida, and then we'll talk about that gentleman who is your opponent. We'll leave the easy questions for last. I want to give you some of the tough issues while you're still fresh on the topic. Let me ask you this, sir. We have a variety of reports around us. We have some reports from the government that everything's just peachy keen in the Gulf. And yet at the same time, just last week, there was an announcement that things just aren't so well in the shrimp industry, that some of the oysters that are being taken are just not healthy. What do you think we need to do? Obviously, you know, we've got this tension between the need to drill and, of course, the need to make sure that we don't poison ourselves, that we don't poison the Gulf. How do you think we can go about balancing those twin concerns, sir?
Yeah, well, you kind of hit the nail on the head that there's a balance there. And seeing the damage that oil spills can cause firsthand, I'm very cognizant of that in my thinking. And, you know, part of that has to do with regulation. But before I get into that, I will say when it comes to energy, you know, I support an all-of-the-above plan, basically. And, you know, this drill, baby, drill philosophy that a lot of Republicans are pushing is short-sighted. We need to look at all types of energy. We need a 15, 20, 50-year plan here. And I'm all for increasing our domestic production, but there's a balance and there's a trade-off. And we don't need to go drill off the east coast of Florida. We don't need to go drill in the Everglades like my opponent wants to do. You know, what people forget is the infrastructure that goes along with it. It's not like you put a rig 5 or 10 miles out and you forget about it. There's a lot that goes along with it. And so much of South Florida is based on our tourism and views and nice beaches and the real estate market. All of that would plummet with oil rigs out there. So there's so many reasons to be against it. But more specifically, you know, having a broad approach with energy, and whether it's solar or wind or thermal or tidal or whatever the alternative energy source is, isn't just good for our environment and for our kids and grandkids. It's good for our economy. You know, this is an opportunity for us to be the leader, you know, into the 21st century on a global basis. You know, this is an opportunity for us to begin creating jobs and looking at new technologies that can really lead this country. You know, we were the leaders with the internet, with Facebook, with Google, et cetera. You know, this could be that next great boom we have as a country, and we need to invest our money in that for all the reasons I just laid out. So there's a short-term view, which is definitely increasing our domestic production, but let's be smart about it. But more importantly, let's look, you know, on the horizon. Let's see what we need to be doing in 10 or 15 years from now. And you know, part of what the president's done recently, or, you know, in his State of the Union, he addressed it was, you know, getting the emission standards for cars. You know, getting it, I don't know what the exact number was, but, you know, they've raised that bar. We know the technology's there. We just have to incentivize these companies to do it and to put it into place.
You know, it seems to me that we hear so much what I'm going to generously call mythology from the right. That drill, baby, drill is the answer. When in fact the science shows that we're doing more with American resources now. The fake idea that this pipeline across the United States is going to help our energy, when in fact anybody who looks at all into the matter discovers that this oil is going to be shipped overseas. So you know, we've got this kind of mythology. When clearly the alternative energy resources are the way to go, and I think you pointed out some really good reasons why. You know, we've been the innovators in technology. We've established the internet that everyone's benefiting from, and clearly alternate energy sources and alternate energy technologies are going to be very helpful to you. But let me ask you this, sir, to finally kind of wrap up the Gulf issue, at least temporarily, sir. You know, recently we've seen the Justice Department come down and place charges against one engineer for deleting emails. This is a long time to see the first charges placed on BP. Do you think we're seeing an adequate response at this point from the Justice Department on the damage, the tremendous damage that BP has caused to the Gulf?
Unfortunately, no, I don't. I don't think our government's done enough to address it. And seeing it firsthand, in my opinion, a problem you know, we have turned a problem into a disaster. And I think we're going to be dealing with the ramifications of that spill for decades to come. And, you know, whether it's the dead dolphin we see, you know, rolling up on the beaches day after day, or the oysters, or the fish with lesions, or the, you know, the oil we continuously floating up on the beaches, it's still out there. It didn't just miraculously disappear. And unfortunately, what the dispersant did is put it out of sight and therefore out of mind. And, you know, we would be out there cleaning it up and were instructed to go in because they wanted to spray the oil slicks and make it disappear. You know, we had not enough capability, but we had at least some capabilities to clean it up and do a much better job than they would allow. And, you know, what you mentioned with the, you know, with the arrest, it, in my opinion, the timing is pretty poor on this. This is a long time coming. I know it's investigated thoroughly, but I think we've all known for a long time that there was negligence and a lot of people at fault here. And the bigger picture to me is how do we prevent this from happening again? And so much of that it has to do with regulation. And, you know, as a Democrat, we're painted with this brush of big government and over-regulation, but it's not about that. You know, it's about smarter regulation and regulation that gets down to the point in solving the problem. And, you know, what I learned when I was there in the Gulf is there's thousands and thousands of abandoned rigs in the Gulf of Mexico right now. And they're sitting there, they're dilapidated, they're rusting, and they're continually leaking. And when we were drilling, when we began drilling in the Gulf, we were in, you know, 50 or 100 feet of water. Now we're drilling in, you know, 10,000 feet of water, and it's more or less the same regulations. Clearly the technology is not the same that we're using. It's the same regulations. So it's not about having more regulations. It's about having smarter regulations that addresses the current technology. So I think that's what needs to be addressed.
The last thing I'll say on the topic, or the last question I'll throw at you on this topic, you know, we learned that BP and the Exxon Valdez are similar problems. We learned that BP had a blowout just the year before, basically the same sort of concrete not effectively blocking and having a blowout in the Caucasus. And now we've got this. It seems to me we have a twofold problem. Number one, as you say, pointing out the fact that we've got ongoing issues with the derelict wells, with the remnants of the BP problem. But I think we also have to keep another eye on the future. We've got drilling going on between the Florida Keys and Cuba. Do you think that adequate plans are in place right now to deal with some crisis that might come up in some future where we don't really have control over a platform between the Keys and Cuba?
No, we are not ready for a spill in our backyard, in Cuba, in the Gulf, anywhere. You know, what we learned after the BP oil spill was we didn't have the assets to handle something of that size. And we didn't have the personnel in place, nor do we have the assets. And initially they talked about getting basically getting warehouses every, you know, X amount of miles along the Gulf and having a, you know, support team ready and willing to react to a spill. And, you know, that was one thing with the Gulf. And now that we have, you know, this oil rig in Cuba, which is about 60, 90 miles off the Florida Keys, it poses a major threat. Because if there is a spill, we can't do anything. We can't go down there because of the embargo. So even if we had the best technology and the best people to go handle it, we wouldn't be allowed to because of the embargo. So there's a lot going on with the Cuba issue specifically. And it's so funny to me that, you know, my opponent brings that rig up constantly in Cuba, yet he wants to go drill off our own coast. So I don't get that one. But we're not ready is the bottom line there.
Well, it seems to me like we need to have some pre-positioned materials there, personnel trained, so that should things go awry, you can't always wish for the best. Wishing for the best is an interesting idea, but it doesn't sound to be very responsible. Let me go to another topic, sir, of great concern in Florida. And I think as an accountant, you're going to be have peculiar strength in this arena. Florida is hit with the twin dilemmas of a crashed economy, a foreclosure crisis. So much of Florida's economy had been based in building and development. What do you see is the way we can start to rebuild ourselves out of this current economic disaster? And then after you address that, could you talk a little bit about the housing crisis and the foreclosure crisis?
Sure. Well, in my opinion, they're connected directly, because for the vast majority of Americans, their house is their biggest asset. So until the housing market recovers and at least stabilizes and that confidence is there in the minds of working Americans, they're not going to go out and buy that car. They're not going to go buy that new TV. They're not going to go spend the money because of what they just went through. So even if, you know, their house hasn't been foreclosed on, you know, even if they're in their house, they're still a little bit worried about the price of it. And they probably lost so much equity in it, they're concerned. So the housing crisis still is not over yet. And, you know, I think we need, and there was an article in the paper actually on, I think it was on Friday or Saturday, that they finally started to loosen the rules to apply for mortgage refinancing and for some of the money from the federal government to let individuals that are in trouble get some government money to help them out because of what they've gone through. So, you know, part of what's happened is has been addressed. We need to do a better job with that, with allowing individuals to refinance at these historically low rates right now and ensuring that they stay in their homes. And it's going to be a slow process. Nothing's going to happen overnight. But I think we're trending in the right direction. South Florida is particularly fortunate, and I think we're going to be one of the first to pull out of this. I'm very bullish on the Treasure Coast, on Palm Beach, on all of Florida. And, you know, I think that'll be a big part to getting our country back on track is the housing market. Beyond that, and it's also related, is getting banks to start lending. You know, they're sitting on over $2 trillion of cash right now, and they're not lending it out. So they have to start, you know, opening up those lines of credit for small business people, for you know, students, for people, you know, that I graduated with from college or are, you know, educated, they're smart, they want to go start a business, and they can't get a loan for their house, they can't get a loan for their car, they can't get a loan to start a new business. It's not fair, and we need to help them out.
It's, you know, it seems to me that we've done so well by the bankers, and we've done so well by these credit lending agencies, and yet it's the public that seems to be not getting the resources. Do you see any way that we can kind of turn that situation around? Because it seems to really undercut, you know, the perception, or at least the supports the contention that only the big people are taken care of, and the heck with the little people.
Right. And yeah, you're exactly right. There was a Wall Street bailout, and the banks were bailed out, but there was no consumer bailout. And banks got a lot of money, and they're still sitting on it. And unfortunately, they're not cleaning their balance sheets quickly enough. You know, they're sitting on a lot of loans and a lot of houses and a lot of assets they know are undervalued. And once they start recognizing those losses, you know, they're worried about this spiral effect. And it's going to be a slow process, as I said. But, you know, it's not just the banks. It's the Fortune 500 companies. And, you know, they're doing great. If you're looking at, you know, CNBC every morning, you can see the stocks are through the roof. Our markets are doing great right now. But it's the small businesses that we need to focus on, and that's really the engine of our economy is small businesses. And that's where our government needs to be involved. And that's really, you know, when you look at District 18, that's not major corporations for the most part. It's small businesses, and that's where our government needs to help out and needs to make sure that they have the resources they need to grow, needs to make sure the tax code is fair for them. You know, they need to make sure that if they want to go buy a new piece of property, new piece of equipment, that, you know, we continue to incentivize them through the tax code. And, you know, that's something that has come up in the last couple of years. And if you look at some of the numbers recently, companies are investing more than they have in decades. So that's a good sign for the future. They're spending money, but there's just not enough consumer confidence out there to really get the economy going. You know, we need to look at regulation. I mentioned that, you know, briefly, that there is a fine line there between over-regulation and smart regulation and under-regulation. You know, no one's going to say that it was too much regulation that got us into this mess. It was a lack of regulation and not enough regulation in the right place. So we need to address that. And so much of you know, this growing disparity between the rich and poor in our country has to do with two things, and it's regulation and our tax code. And being a CPA and studying our tax code and you know, seeing firsthand the loopholes and deductions that not only individuals, you know, get away with, but corporations. You know, Apple just released their tax results. I think it was 9.8% they paid. You know, that's unsustainable as a society to enable the BPs and the Shells and the Apples and the largest corporations to pay under 10% in taxes. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm for incentivizing companies, as I said, but we have to have a bottom line. You know, I would support an alternative minimum tax for corporations that say, look, if you're GE and you want to invest in windmills or you want to invest in some new green technology, then we're gonna incentivize you to do it. You have to pay a minimum of 15% taxes. So if it's a matter of bringing down the top-line tax rate from 35 to 28%, but eliminating loopholes and deductions, then I would support that. And that would, you know, that's going to make us more competitive on a global market. And unfortunately, we're wasting so much time and energy fighting between Republicans and Democrats in this class warfare, back and forth nonsense. It's well beyond that at this point. It's what's going to make sure we're competitive on a global scale, because that's what's important right now, is making sure, you know, companies not only stay in America, but we attract new ones to grow in our own country.
Let me ask you one other question before I give you the great cartoon target that your opponent has made himself. The other question I want to ask you, I mean, you've given me so many wonderful answers, and I can tell you there's a lot of progressives that are going to be helping you out, because you're clearly understanding the dilemmas that we're facing right now, and I think you bring a real clear perception of what needs to be done. One other difficult question that faces our country is, we have, over the decades since World War II, undertaken a larger and larger and larger role in, some call it policing, some call it you know, weaponizing the planet, selling weapons to everybody. Do you think that at some point we have to evaluate how many countries we want to have troops in, how many battles, how many wars we need to be fighting? It seems to me we're putting an awful lot of our resources, both human and otherwise, into building other nations when we need to build this nation ourselves.
I mean, absolutely. We're spending $2 billion a week in Afghanistan. I mean, come on. Our roads, bridges, schools, et cetera, are literally crumbling. I mean, that's not just a talking point. That's real, you know. And $2 billion a week in Afghanistan, we're not the world's police. We need to be strong. We need to attack threats when they arise. But we're not nation builders, and we need to, you know, get ourselves out of Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, as quickly as possible, in my opinion, and really focus on our own backyard, because we do have major problems here, and our priorities are wrong right now.
Let me ask you one question before we get into Colonel West's approach to politics. It seems that there are some people on the right who are questioning something that seems to have been a long-standing American value, that education is a good thing, that people aiming to have their own home, that these are good American values, these are the American dream, so to speak. Do you think that education is an elitist idea for Americans, that it should be out of the reach of regular Americans?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's ridiculous. What was Santorum, what was his remark? That Obama's a snob for wanting everyone to go to college. it's embarrassing that he would say something like that. Education is the key. No matter what it is, with the economy and growing it and strengthening it and looking to the future, it always comes back to education. And you know, that's something that made our country so great, is everybody had access to quality education. And it's not the case anymore. You know, unfortunately, it's becoming more and more expensive and less accessible for so many of us. And that's not fair. We need to be going the other direction. You know, we wonder why, you know, I think we're ranked in the 20s now for math and science. You know, yet China, India, Brazil, these developing countries are investing, you know, so much money into education, and they're doing a much better job than us. And we need to look ourselves in the mirror and say, hey, what made us great? How did we get there? And let's keep doing it. You know, I was at Scripps, that's right in Jupiter the other day, and talking to some of the scientists there. And there's literally people from China coming to our backyard and recruiting our scientists to come over there, and they're offering them millions of dollars to come over there to work in China, set up a lab. They're going to give them everything they could ever dream of. Meanwhile, our government's defunding it. You know, it's the same thing with education. You know, so many students come over here and they study at Harvard, they go to Yale, Stanford, MIT, et cetera, and then we kick them out because of our faulty immigration laws. So education is the key to our future, and we need to bring a focus back to that. And one more thing I'll point out.
Sure.
As an economy evolves, it's not, you know, we can't just rely on people with high school degrees anymore. You know, we need college degrees, and we need advanced degrees. We need PhDs and masters, because that's what happens in a developed economy. And, it's not only that, it's retraining people that have lost their job. And just because you're 45 and your factory, shut down doesn't mean you can't be retrained for a new job. And our government needs to help out in that process and retrain, so many people that have lost their jobs.
Yeah, if we can invest in a road in Afghanistan, maybe we can invest in American people, huh?
Gosh, what a brilliant idea.
Well, you know, Mr. Murphy, I've got to tell you, a lot of people have challenging elections. I think in one sense you have a relatively easy job here, because you're going to be running against what I would call a cartoon candidate, a candidate who's prepared to basically say anything at all to get a headline with no facts underlying. And I just want to read a couple of his comments and have you react to them one by one. Just recently he was quoted as saying, this was a comment he made about President Obama. Although he's never served his country in uniform, President Barack Obama seems to understand a thing or two about weaponry. The president's weapon of choice is tax policy, and the enemies are small business investors, entrepreneurs, corporations deemed undesirable. Do you see the president's policies as treating American business as the enemy?
No, absolutely not. I mean, unfortunately, I think our president can do a better job of messaging right now when it comes to the tax code and fairness. But to equate the tax code to weaponry and choosing the right weapon, prior to that quote, that was in a letter to the editor that Alan West wrote, I think, to The Hill. And just above that, Alan West always likes to go back to his military background. He talks about when he was on the battlefield, he could choose which weapon was necessary to eliminate the enemy. It's not a battlefield right now. I don't think we need to continually go back to these allusions and these analogies of war and weapons to use. We need to be smart about it. We need to see what the problem is and address it. And comments like that are just so off base. I don't really even know where he comes up with that stuff, to be honest. But I obviously disagree with that.
Another of his interesting comments was, children who wish to continue the legacy of their parents will find it increasingly difficult as the death tax exemption will shrink from $5 million to $1 million. Clearly, he's looking out for those $5 million legacy people. Do you think this is indicative of the president's, I won't say socialist policies, but his attacks on the rich?
with West, West and the rest of the Tea Party, their number one concern is it's not even the top 1%, 0.001% that they're really concerned about. And, as I said earlier, our tax could have to be addressed. It is really unfortunate what so many people get away with. And I talk to a lot of people on a daily basis that are very, successful, and they don't mind paying a little bit more in tax. They don't mind. But they're not breaking the law. You know, Mitt Romney is not breaking the law when he's paying 14%. It's what we've allowed him to do, what we've allowed him to get away with. And, you know, the earned income deduction is should not be allowed. That they're taking advantage of the tax shield, and it needs to be addressed. So, you know, whether it's you name it, our tax policy, it needs to be addressed.
You know, it seems to me that once upon a time, a politician would be embarrassed by hiding their money in an offshore account and avoiding their fair amount of taxes. But clearly, these people have no problem doing that. And of course, the last thing I'm going to bring up of Colonel West's interesting comments was his accusation that he thinks that the Kremlin is guiding Congress. I'm
going to
think that you don't really agree with that.
Gosh, I mean, the Communist Party in America came out and said it wasn't true, and I think laughed at it. It's one thing after another with Alan West, with his rhetoric, with his divisiveness. That's really why I'm doing this, is that extremism that he continues to show. And he is unhinged. He has no desire to work with people across the aisle. And to me, compromise isn't a four-letter word. If you're Republican, Democrat, Independent, it doesn't matter. You know, this infighting isn't helping anybody. It's the people that are hurting because of this. And when you call someone a communist, when you call him vile, despicable, whatever his, you know, word of the week is, how are you going to go work with that person? How are you going to sit down and come to a agreement on how to really help the American people? You're not. And that's the bottom line. That's the biggest problem with this is you know, his refusal to work with others. And you know, he's not a dumb guy. He's got to know that calling, you know, pointing fingers and name calling isn't going to open up that friendship and allow people to work to help, you know, the citizens of the Treasure Coast and Palm Beach. So I'll leave it that with him.
That's fine.
People are getting tired of it, to be honest.
we'll leave Mr. West to his own devices. But let me ask you in sum, sir. If you were going to when you take your place in Congress, do you think there's room for some regulation on the issue of Corexit? You were out there. You saw that the results of that dispersion. Do you think this is something we need to be paying attention to? The issue of Corexit is as part of a treatment of oil spills. A lot of people are very concerned about the long-term effects of the chemistry of Corexit.
Rightfully so. Yeah, well, as I said, I think we turned a problem into a disaster. And, you know, the dispersant that we sprayed for months and months in the Gulf is much more toxic than the oil. And what it did is, as I said, you know, it sank it. It didn't disappear. It sank it. In my own experience, I'll tell you firsthand, what was so unique about our oil skimmer is it didn't necessarily pick up what was on the surface. It picked up what was just below the surface and what was in the first 3 feet of the water column. And we would be out there skimming, wouldn't see any oil, no signs of it. But our well was continually filling up with oil because this dispersant had broken it up into microscopic droplets all throughout the water column. So we'd be collecting oil, but no one would see it. So it's everywhere in the Gulf right now. It's out there. And yes, the regulation needs to be addressed, and we have to look at the chemicals we're going to use to clean this stuff up and decide if it's worth, you know, the risk-reward is really there for it.
Okay, great. Sir, when we have progressives that want to help support your campaign or volunteer, why don't you tell us how we can get in touch with your offices and how they can send you their support and sign up for membership or volunteering. How can we get in touch with your campaign, sir?
Well, the best way is on our website. It's patrickmurphy2012.com. It's www.patrickmurphy2012.com. And we have a link to volunteer there. We have a link to contribute. We laid out quite a few issues there. I tried to be as open and just straightforward. I didn't dance around anything. I laid it out how I feel. And we'd love to have the support of everyone listening. We got a great challenge here, and I look forward to the opportunity to serve the people of Palm Beach and the Treasure Coast.
Well, we want to thank you for joining us. Is there any final comments you'd like to make, sir?
Thank you for having us today, and I hope to have the opportunity to come back on.
Oh, absolutely. And if you have any announcements you'd like to make to the electorate out here, we're always there. I want to thank you again so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Have a good evening.
Okie doke. You too, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was a fantastic interview with our candidate, a progressive Democrat, running for Congress here. He's going to be opposing Colonel West and his wild approach to government. A couple more stories I want to get to before we welcome our next guest. I do want to remind you that this is Progressive News Network, and we've had a wonderful set of guests on. Just last week we had Greg Palast, and we had also Kristen Jacobs, who's another candidate from the North Broward, South Palm Beach area, another good Democrat running for office. And this coming weeks ahead, we have Dennis Campbell from Britain, who's just come out with a new book called The Vagina Wars. He'll be talking to us about the Republican war on women, and why is it that these people want to go back to the 1800s and restrict the rights of half of humanity. It's a strange thing, and he's brought some very good arguments to bear on this issue and why they are doing this. And also coming up is recently there was a presentation at International Indian River State College up in Fort Pierce by Mr. Goodall, who was the New York Times lawyer who fought the Pentagon Papers case. And he addresses the issue of WikiLeaks, and he compares WikiLeaks to the Pentagon Papers and makes the case that Julian Assange and Bradley Manning are doing patriotic service for this country. So stay tuned for those shows coming up in the near future. And I also want to mention we've got some wonderful progressive broadcasters in the Florida area, people you should know about. There's the Amy Tidd show on Saturdays out of Melbourne. And we've got Brian Stetton, who's on Monday nights and Friday nights with a show called Progress Toward Democracy. Another fellow progressive broadcaster I want you to know about is the lovely and talented Miss Gwen Holden Berry with her show Here Be Monsters. Fantastic people, all with important news. And you should be paying attention to these progressive broadcasters as well. I want to thank my co-producer, Ms. Mickey Royce of The Media Goddess, for her efforts at helping me put these shows together. These are all people you should be in touch with, you should know about. Okay, let me go on to a couple other stories before we get Mr. Justin Snyder on from Credo, who's really throwing some energy behind the campaign to oppose Mr. West. Okay, just one more minute. It seems that the Environmental Protection Agency and the Coast Guard have violated the Clean Water Act by authorizing the use of oil dispersants on oil spills without knowing whether the chemicals will harm endangered species and habitats, the Center for Biological Diversity claims in federal court. Joined as plaintiffs by the Surf Rider Foundation, the Pacific Environment, groups call for the EPA to study immediately the effects of dispersants on endangered and threatened species, including whales, sea turtles, salmon, and seabirds in the Pacific, and polar bears and walruses in the Arctic. If the chemical dispersants are going to be used after an oil spill, we have to know whether they'll kill or hurt whales, sea turtles, and other wildlife. So far, the EPA has no idea, said the Center for Biological Diversity, Deirdre McDonnell, in a statement. Unprecedented amounts of dispersant were dumped into the sea during the Deepwater Horizon disaster, and they're likely still affecting the Gulf of Mexico, where dead dolphins continue to wash ashore. Chemical dispersants break oil spills up into tiny droplets. They work by breaking the outer membrane of cells and oils and organs alike. This theoretically allows the oil to be eaten by microorganisms and become diluted faster than if left untreated. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it seems like I got my next guest, so let me go ahead and bring him on. Good evening and welcome. Is this Justin?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Justin, we want to welcome you, sir. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me anytime.
Justin, I'm told by my co-producer that you are the Credo representative for this area. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what Credo has in mind for the progressive community in Florida?
Sure. That's correct. I'm the district director here for Credo Super PAC. Credo started the Super PAC back in January of this year, January 31st to be exact. And they're essentially created this campaign called Take Down the Tea Party 10. We're essentially holding the worst congressional extremists accountable for their radical attacks on women, on science, on equality, and a range of other issues. And a couple of those, the leader of that group that we have, of course, is our very own Alan West. But what makes us a little bit different, everybody has this misconception about the Super PAC, the only Super PACs that we know are Karl Rove's Crossroads GPS and American Crossroads, that all they do is raise money for millionaires and go out there and buy TV time. That's not what we're doing here at Credo. At Credo, we're taking that money that we get from over 40,000 individual donors from all over the country and putting it into field offices. Essentially, we're making this about the people, making it the people's pack, making it about people power rather than money, making money equal speech. Here, we're all about the people. We're taking it to the people in the constituencies of where these radicals, where these radical right-wingers are representing.
You know, it seems to me, Justin, and we'll talk a little bit more in detail about your own path to this point, but it just seems to me so often that these Tea Partiers are big on rhetoric, but really short on ideas and projects and plans and means and methods to improve things. They'd rather just yell fire.
That would be a pretty accurate statement. I mean, Alan West is the prime example of that. He'll go out there and say, regardless of it's a fact or it's not, if it raises him a couple of bucks or gets him free media on Fox News or on the right wing blogosphere, it's fair game. That's been Alan West's leading campaign strategy, if you will. Say something asinine in public, blame the left wing media for taking it out of context, and then put out a fundraising letter 20 minutes later to raise money from people out of state. That's what all of them have been doing. And we at Credo don't stand for that, and a majority of Americans, including Floridians in Congressional District 18, don't agree with that.
You know, Justin, let me ask you a question, and this may be a little outside your arena, but I was just curious, do you have any sense of where the funding comes for these guys? Are these the creatures of Alec? Are these the creatures of Rove? Who's funding this Mr. West? Where does he come from? Do you have any idea of that?
That's the great thing about our democracy. There are great websites and great resources to look at where these candidates get their money from. Example, majority Alan West, if you go online and you look up Alan West, where he gets the majority of his donors, if you look at his top 10 contributors, most of them are people that we don't identify ourselves with, including Citizens United. Citizens United handed him a $10,000 check this cycle. Corporations, majority of his money comes from corporations and comes from larger interests and outside interests. And that pretty much proves this entire argument that these Tea Party guys are completely out of touch with their district. If they were in touch with their district, they would be going into their districts and raising money from the people within their districts, and the majority of their money would come from within their districts. And that's not the case with Mr. West.
You know, it seems like a person who's going to pick up and relocate his campaign, relocate his district, is somebody whose commitment to any one particular constituency is, shall we say, a little lean.
That would be accurate. I would consider that an accurate statement. I mean, even the Republican leadership even this time around in 2010, when he ran for the first time, the Republican National Committee and the Congressional Committees didn't want anything to do with him. They were too extreme for the Republican establishment. And if you're too extreme for the Republican establishment, man, that's a heck of an accomplishment.
We'll come back to the cartoon candidate from Florida in just a second, but let me talk to you about yourself for a little bit.
Sure.
You know, I mean, we're obviously progressives in this arena are very, very happy to see resources brought to bear in this battle, because clearly there's not a progressive in Florida that is anything but incensed at some of these incredibly absurd charges and ridiculous statements this guy makes. But to get back to yourself, let me ask you a question I ask most of my guests. You know, what was it in your life? What was it in your early experiences that said, you can't just be a pedestrian, you have to be involved, you're not just a consumer, you're a person who's going to work on making this a better world? Could you tell us a little about yourself?
Sure, absolutely. I'm a local. You know, I graduated high school in South Florida. I went to college in Central Florida. The majority of my younger years, up until the age of 14, I was in the state of New Jersey. So I've been in public schools. All public schools except for my college experience was in public school. I come from the arena of great parents who taught me, you can't, if you want to fix a broken system, you can't sit on the sidelines. You got to get in there and get your hands dirty. And for too long, especially down here in South Florida, for me, my big issue is education. You come down here to South Florida and you see that the schools are crumbling apart. You'll see portable classrooms. You'll see overstuffed classrooms. And we need leaders that'll go in there that have lived it, that have been a part of that situation, you know, that have seen the issues, that seen the problems that we really need to fix firsthand. And too much over time, it seems that we elect these politicians who really haven't lived that and haven't really been through that. I got involved in politics at a really young age because I was taught and learned that we need that we are the government. This whole argument from the right wing that the government is watching us, that it's Big Brother, that, you know, that it's the government is always bad, that there's no such thing as good government, is completely false and a false argument. We are the government. That's what a democracy is. America is one of the biggest and brightest democracies in the world, and it's because of the way that people participate in it. One of the justices on the Supreme Court wrote a great book about the Supreme Court and how anywhere else in the world, a ruling in the Supreme Court would cause riots and would cause chaos in the streets. But in America, a Supreme Court issues a ruling, people either accept it, sure, they'll protest, but there isn't any violence against it. That's what makes America beautiful about it. And we go in there and you get these politicians that go and they say these crazy things, they twist the truth, they bend the truth just to fit a narrative to raise money to keep themselves in office, and that's completely the antithesis of what America and what the system is supposed to be. And that's what got me involved, and we need more people to get involved in our politics to change the system. Otherwise, it's just going to remain the status quo, and we're going to have to deal with mediocrity.
You know, once upon a time, I'm old enough to remember when conservatives could make a sustained intellectual argument, that they had reasons, they had ideas, they were prepared to discuss and reason together. I mean, even William F. Buckley, who, you know, had his own particular quirks, was prepared to sit down with progressive thinkers, with leftists, for God's sakes, and share and consider other ideas. But now it seems we've got these cartoon people involved who, you know, they want to shout slogans. They seem to be opposed to education. They seem to be opposed to the idea that people want to have their own homes. You know, we heard them applaud the fact that somebody was going to die because they couldn't afford health care. I mean, it's a really curious turn the Republicans have taken. And I think, in a way, they've left the sane battlefield behind and have made themselves literally, you know, buffoons in the public square.
I would agree with that. This is no longer our grandfather's Republican Party anymore. This isn't the party of Teddy Roosevelt. This isn't the party of Lincoln anymore. This is the party of Limbaugh, Beck, and Hannity. This is what it's completely evolved into. And it really puts a hindrance on the progress that we as a country can make and need to make if we're going to pull ourselves out of this economic slowdown that we brought upon ourselves.
I mean, you know, even during the Nixon administration, which, you know, many of us can well remember the serious anti-constitutional flaws. I mean, here's a man who was aware of environmental issues, you know, who brought the EPA into place. Clearly, this is something that the contemporary GOP is let's just say, undisposed toward.
Absolutely, absolutely. You can even take it a step further. The godfather of the new Republican Party, as they like to put it, is Ronald Reagan. But Ronald Reagan had a lot of progressive ideals. He was big on domestic spending, had one of the biggest domestic spending expenditures in history up to his point. You know, he was for amnesty for illegal immigrants. You know, he was for the Buffett rule before there was a Buffett rule. He felt that millionaires should pay their fair share. Essentially, we all know Ronald Reagan, if he was alive and running in this presidential race, if you will, would not be able to win the nomination in today's Republican Party. He is too moderate. And when Ronald Reagan is too moderate to win today's Republican nomination, it gives you a pretty good symbol of what the Republican Party has carved out for themselves.
Well, let me ask you this, sir. This sounds absolutely fantastic. How can good progressive Floridians get involved with the Credo campaign? How can
sure.
we help? How can we participate? Why don't you give us some lay of the land there?
Yeah, sure. So Credo, our website is takedownwest.com, and on that you'll totally see all the events that we're going to be doing. Like I was saying earlier, we're completely flipping this super PAC model on its head. Instead of raising money from a few wealthy individuals like many of the right-wing PACs are doing, we've taken money from over 50,000 donors nationwide since January 31st. And we're not taking that money for ads, we're taking it to do field work. We're opening field offices in every district that we're present in. And doing that, we've mobilized activists and volunteers and everybody local in that district that live in the district to mobilize people to make sure that we get Alan West's extreme rhetoric and his extreme voting record out to the public, which is what he doesn't want, which is why he throws these distractions at us. At our website at takedownwest.com is a calendar of events that we'll be doing, a link to our Facebook and our Twitter page, plenty of information on what we're doing and on Alan West's rhetoric. But most people need to understand is, yes, it's a presidential election, but the president can only do so much when he's in the White House. And taking back the United States House from the Tea Party that took it from us in 2010 should be and has to be a priority if we're really, really going to make any progress on reclaiming the American exceptionalism that Alan West likes to preach.
Well, this sounds like a really fantastic thing. I'm really glad to hear about this. And I think you can definitely count on our support anytime you need to make an announcement. You just let us know. We are with you all the way. We want to see people elected who actually care about their constituents, who care about the environment, who are interested in helping people. And this rhetoric for rhetoric's sake and this basically yelling fire in a crowded theater kind of approach is clearly not helping our government whatsoever. And it seems that these people have forgotten what the idea of civil servants about. So we really want to welcome you, Justin. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I look forward to talking to you in the future. And everybody out there, make sure you follow us on Twitter, Takedown West. Find us on Facebook and check out our website. And join us and help us take down Alan West and his extremist rhetoric and the rest of the Tea Party.
One last thing. You do have events tomorrow, don't you?
Yes, we do. Tomorrow in Stewart, the esteemed congressman will be speaking at a plant, the turbo combustors plant in Stewart, and we'll be up there showing our support for the workers there. That company is actually in the middle of a buyout by another corporation, and we'll be there standing with the workers in solidarity there as well. And then also on the 5th of May, the Republican Party of Broward County is hosting their Lincoln Day dinner, where there is the trifecta of Republicans there, including Jeff Atwater, Attorney General Pam Bondi, and Congressman West will be speaking there. And we plan on having a very large presence with our union brothers and sisters and progressive friends there to show that those Republican extremists are not in the best interest and our interest as constituents and voters.
Thanks so much, Justin. You have a real good night, and we'll be seeing you out there on the streets.
Looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Richard.
Okay, solidarity, brother, solidarity.
Solidarity. Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, friends, you've been with us for another hour of Progressive News Network. I want to thank all my guests for joining us. I want to thank my co-producer, Ms. Mickey Royce, for all her efforts. She is a tireless progressive activist, someone that many of you know out there across the state of Florida. She is a very hard worker, and her organization, Media Goddess, is a wonderful organization. If you need some political support, some publicity, public relations, she can help you. I also want to thank my other sponsor, Imagineering Productions, web media, web services, graphics, animation, and search engine marketing. So thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next week, and see you around. Solidarity. Yeah.